Welcome to this episode. Today we're going to be hanging out with Chase. I met Chase 3 years ago. He came to our How to Charge Live event here in Nashville. And at that time, he was not charging for his time and ideas. Pretty traditional. His practice was AUM and mostly insurance. But after that event, he went down the path of overcoming a lot of head trash and building a business model to where he now has 100 clients paying him a monthly fee for his time and ideas. So I hope this helps you and challenges maybe limiting beliefs you have on how can I start getting paid for my time and ideas and add that piece to my practice. Let's jump in. Chase, welcome, man.
What's going on, brother?
Appreciate you doing this. I love hearing about your practice and the progression you've been through with planning. So you came to our event. You are in the Northwestern Mutual System. Financial planning is picking up, and I hear it from different advisors around the country, but you were ahead of the curve, and people are now saying, hey, how did Chase do it? What systems did he figure out? And so for our listeners today, there's a lot of them that are like, I want to charge for advice. I think I'm worth it, but there's these initial hurdles that they can't break through. So I'd love to hear your background and then start getting into like what made you take the leap into, you still help with insurance, asset management is still strong, but that you can sit with somebody and say, hey, I'm worth it. You should pay me for my time and ideas.
No, absolutely. So I've been in this industry now for about 10 years. Got my start a little bit, I guess, not the normal way that people come into this industry. I went military first, ended up wanting to go in as a combat engineer. Thought engineering was the way to go. Thought I was going to go 20 years with the military and retire. God had other plans. Ended up having a couple surgeries, getting medicaled out, having to make the transition in between there from being a combat engineer over to being in the finance section. And I'm out of Jackson, Mississippi. And so I don't know if you know much about the area, but it's not the financial capital of the world. And so there's only a couple places that we got to go and interview. And so it was the Raymond James, the Morgan Stanley, Edward Jones, Northwestern Mutual Guardian, and the managing partner at the time, he's moved on now, but he was a 30-year vet as well. And so just connected with him and decided, hey, this is where I'm going to get my start and go be here. And so started out the very typical way through Northwestern. And then about, because it started in 2015, I believe we came to your event right as COVID was dying down. So about 4 years, same time when Gavin.
That's right.
And my business partner now, Gates, came with me. And the reason why we're coming back is because he definitely believes that, like, hey, he was a little too young in it to get the most out of it. So we're coming back. But we really decided that, okay, hey, especially in the market of medical professionals that we work in, we do a ton of stuff for them. And what really opened our eyes was starting to listen to your podcast back in the day and saying, okay, hey, we're doing a lot of this outside of just a basic risk management, let's start a Roth IRA or backdoor Roth IRAs. It's all the additional conversations. And Gates and I are both very long-winded. So we have people tell us that, hey, you're going to try to have a 45-minute, to an hour long conversation. And that is still to this day just not possible for us. So we wanted to truly build out a system to where, hey, we weren't feeling like we were just trying to churn meetings out.
Yeah.
And to really form a relationship with clients that, hey, if they need to meet, twice a year, three times a year, if we need to have that additional meeting with the CPA, it doesn't always feel like there's a transaction attached to it. And so that's what we really started, really honing in our story and what we were trying to do with our practice, and then just really started taking that back to new clients and current clients and just tell them, hey, this is how we're going to set everything up. And it's been wonderful since then.
Well, how'd the language change? So when you think about the way you used to position your firm, your practice, getting really practical, and I'm sure there's iterations of it as you've continued to tweak it. What is the script? What did it look like? And what does it look like now?
Yeah, it's become a little bit, the process got longer. So we definitely went from the typical trying to do like two meetings and then making a decision to, hey, it may be three or four. And it's a lot more of us telling our story and the why behind why we were building our practice like this. Because we wanted them to understand, like, hey, there is the fee. We're going to help with all this extra stuff, the investments, the insurance, but why we're going to have so many meetings, why we're going to be trying to communicate more than I think most of the normal advisors do, who are just trying to gather assets, and just tell them the experience that we're trying to cater to them, right? And kind of saying, hey, this is going to be something that's going to continue and be ongoing. And depending on where we're at in life, what may change, right? Hey, that monthly fee can either go up or it can go down.
Yep.
But hey, we're working together. If you're working with Gates and I, this will be here. And a lot of that came from really just telling people what we were trying to do. And I think that's what we saw a lot of buy-in from people, that we didn't try to make it a big sales presentation. It was just very much the open communication. And I got that idea back from a book, which I think you've even talked about, the book called Getting Naked.
Oh, yeah.
And read that one, and it was very eye-opening of like, okay, so we can literally just be fully transparent and honest and just tell, like, hey, this is what we're trying to build. Yep. Do you want on the arc, or hey, is someone else going to be a better fit? And there's been no turning back.
I love that. Yeah, I think it's one of those things that this put in front of the right client is like perfect. They light up and they're like, I've been looking for this. You can try to position this to the wrong client. And at times I hear advisors, they almost try to, they take that as feedback of like, oh, this doesn't work, or I'm not worth it. To where if you are currently, if you're listening and you're an AUM insurance advisor and you say, hey, I'm going to start trying to set an expectation that I should get paid for all these meetings and all this service and all this accountability. If you go to a client that has only known you as an AUM advisor right away, and you don't position it well, like, don't be surprised that they're not ready to hear it.
Oh, very, very much so. And even on the opposite side of that, starting out in Northwestern Regional, there's many people that were just insurance clients. And we kind of had to go back, reintroduce some of the, you know, what we're trying to build as a group, as a firm, what type of planning that we're trying to do, what that actually means for them. So that makes sure, like, hey, they see the value before we're just like, hey, pay a fee or go away, right? Because then that's just not fair. And so we noticed a lot of success with new medical professionals coming in, right? Whether we just got introduced to them, whether they're graduating and starting to practice, a lot of our nerve actually came from going back to current clients of like, okay, how do we make sure we are very clear of that change? What is going to change for them, and why does this exist? And once we got out of our own way, we saw a lot of success with that as well. So much so that like we had to, I think like you just mentioned, really be like, okay, are we just trying to get a certain amount of people paying a monthly fee or monthly subscription? Or are we able to really provide value with that? That's one thing we kind of had to go back and double check of like, okay, can we actually provide the value? Or do we just, I love this client so much. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't need to pay a fee, or they don't have enough in assets. How do we make sure that like, okay, hey, maybe in a couple of years if they could be there. So we're still constantly trying to evolve this and make sure like, hey, we're not just leaving anybody who wants to be on our shift behind. So
that's good.
Constitution about that.
Yeah, I do think a lot of us are competitive entrepreneurs. And I think if we were like, we're going to get paid for our advice, the idea is like, how can I get as many people paying me as possible? Mm-hmm. But maybe we're heading down a road that we're not going to like what we're building. You know, maybe we're giving too much away for not enough of a fee. And so I think there's one element, and this is what I had to go through, where you just start doing it. And you know, it's not perfect. And you are going to add some value, but you're going to look back in 5 years and say, man, I wish I would have done it different. I should have charged more. I shouldn't have done so much work because the client didn't really need it. And I know that's been our progression, is tightening our service model up and finding that threshold of like, it's exactly the service the client wants for a really fair fee. How are you finding kind of balancing that? Are you doing more than you think you should still? Are you charging what you think you should? What's that balance?
Great question, because this is, on the, me and my team kind of built out, hey, here are the top 10 things that we want to make sure kind of are rocks, like the U.S. system, to have accomplished going into next year. And revisiting the pricing model is one of them, to make sure like, hey, are we being fairly compensated? But at the same time, are we providing the value that equals this compensation? Because there's still, you know, the fees on the AUM and then the fees outside for all the planning stuff, and really trying to articulate the difference of that.
Yeah.
There are some, right, being, I guess you could say, a little soft-hearted, we want all of our current clients that we love to come on board. And so sometimes we kind of got ourselves in the position of like, okay, how small or how much of a discount can we give because they're a current client to be able to have them come on board versus, okay, hey, if someone new is coming on, how do we make sure what we're charging is aligned with that value?
Yeah.
And we're in a position where like, hey, we've had a lot of success over the past year that we've been doing this. So we're like, hey, we have to slow that down. We can't just have growth for the sake of growth. So we're like, hey, we need to bump that up and find it where, hey, people are like, ah, maybe not. Maybe I don't see the value there, and then try to figure out what that number is. So we're still searching for it. So, but going up a little bit more is the next step.
And your model is monthly retainer. And is it essentially good until canceled? Meaning you're setting the expectation that this is just going to keep going unless the client says I'm done, or is it in 12-month blocks? How have you broken that down?
So right now the engagement goes for 12 months, but it is the understanding with the client of like, hey, this is, especially with some of the, a lot more like the 1099 medical professionals, some of the planning that we're doing and working with CPAs, it is like, hey, this is going to go on as long as we're working with each other. And we're trying to build out to where, hey, is there a certain point with AUM to where, hey, that may stop? So that's one of the next things we're looking at for this next year. Cause we started playing around with a monthly subscription because I kind of knew like, hey, that's how I wanted to build this out, especially going to your event. Started dabbling around with this with having to use, you know, joint work with Gavin because we didn't have full access to use that platform at Northwestern at the time.
Definitely.
Got full access, I think March of last year. And then we should end the month, I think with right at 100 people paying a fee every single month. So
that's great, man. And what's the timeline been for that? It's been, because you came to our event.
Is that 3 years ago now? It,
3 years, roughly. Did you hit the ground running as you look back, or were you like, nah, it was like a 6 month of kind of getting our heads in the right spot, trying to implement it? What was the speed of action?
So the speed of action got slowed down because there was a couple more hurdles on through, I guess, through the company that I had to kind of work through. And so I had to start doing stuff with Gavin just to be able to say, hey, here is the fee, right? So everything had to be split and run through him. But, you know, he's a good friend. We've been working together for a long time. So I got to just start playing around with just, okay, how do I want to build out the language around this? How do I want to find what is the right fee? And so I got to do that for about a year of just kind of going back and forth. And then Northwestern kind of changed their system. And then I got fully into the system where I could do everything on my own for our team back in March of 2024. So it's been, what is that, 15 yeah. months? So
I love that. If you can let us into your head a little bit on just the mental side of, I came into the business at Northwestern as an intern back in the day, and you know, and I jumped between some different firms, and there's this pretty standard path of, you know, become a pretty good advisor, learn your products really well, and just wear people out with activity. You call enough people, you meet with enough people, you will eventually be successful. In that playbook, I was not told, hey, and by the way, you're allowed to charge a fee for your time and ideas. Like, that just wasn't even in my reality. When you started thinking that way, what were some roadblocks you hit? Because there's a lot of advisors listening that are like, you know, some are like, hey, I never want to do that. I think that's a small group. But a lot of them are like, I know my time is worth something. The longer I'm in this business, the more valuable I am. I see a lot of professionals, attorneys, doctors, like they get paid for the stuff they do, their time. How did you break through that?
So that's a great question because it definitely was like, hey, we left the event and it was, I mean, full steam ahead with, hey,
clouds parked and
everything. Yeah. We're partnered because we had a balance. And I think that's one of the flaws of our industry of depending on which agency you come in, you either have to go full steam ahead after AUM and you can't really care about anything else to build out the revenue for you to live your life, build a team that can truly support and build out the vision that you want, or you've got to go sell insurance, right? And so after doing that for a couple of years, it kind of just got to the point of, again, being in Jackson, Mississippi, like AUM is here, but it's not as prevalent as everywhere else. So it was a lot of relying on the insurance side of things. And it did help hone our sales ability and our sales skills and communication skills. But after so long, we just got to the point where it's like, okay, hey, there has to be another way to do this, to where like, hey, we don't feel compelled to push one thing or another just to make sure, hey, we're able to sustain, you know, payroll, our lifestyle, anything like that. And so that's when, like I said, I found your podcast, started listening to everything, started doing more research, and then went to your event and then just slowly started trying to communicate that. And for some people, we just started saying like, hey, we're just going to start with $100. Because a lot of it was, you know, our mental roadblocks that we put up of just like, hey, how are they going to feel? And what we noticed is it was easy, may not be the right word, but it definitely was nowhere near as difficult. Like I thought I was going to have to like battle to show and justify what the fee was. But most people really just expect it. Just like, hey, I'm going to pay you something.
That's right.
It'd be weird if you're doing this all for free. And so as we just got more comfortable with that, we just kind of went back and said, okay, hey, let's just slowly start increasing this based off the amount of work we think that we're going to do. And some of those people that we started kind of, you know, doing this with, that we're working with Gavin, we've now brought them fully up under us. And we've told them like, hey, this changed a little bit. We get to do a little bit more. This is what it's going to look like. And as you know, we've increased some of theirs. They're probably not equal to what new clients are paying, because we obviously want to go back and just, you know, surprise, it's doubling. But a little increases here and there. Most people
tolerate
that, hey, they're going to tolerate it. And that was the biggest thing of really understanding that most people are like, they're okay with paying for a service just like anything else they were going to go pay for. And how comfortable people were is what really kind of set us to the point of like, okay, this, we've got to make the full shift.
Yep.
And that's what we've started last year. And that's been, I mean, going steady ever since.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you. Yeah, I think that what I hope advisors buy into is that they're worth it, like, and that there's people willing to pay for it. So I think at a high level, hopefully none of us would argue that. I do think there's some strategy around who's your ideal market. If you are working with doctors, lawyers, business owners, you will not get much pushback on them paying you for a service because that's the world they live in. If your book of business is 60-year-old retirees and you're doing rollovers and annuities and insurance, that's a different conversation. You know, they're maybe not as paying for that, but I still think they might pay a financial planning fee of, you know, $1,200 to onboard them. And I don't think it's an all or nothing absolutely. Thing, but I do think you have to know your market pretty well.
Yeah. And we've done that a couple times because kind of like what you were saying, like there doesn't need to be, even if we discount the advisory fee, like we're going to be compensated on moving that money under our management. But it also just gave us another level of confidence to say like, hey, we can build out this plan for you. It is just going to be this $1,200, $1,500. We'll be able to come back, present and say, here's what we want to change. And then there's just zero expectation that they have to move it all under us, right?
Yep.
Majority of the time, they still do, right? They still want us to build it out and be the one that maintains it. Yep. But that helped us to know like, hey, we are getting compensated for the work that we can do. We can do the best that we can, present it. And then it's really on them to say, hey, do we want to have this relationship, or hey, I'm going to go take this back to my advisor and go do it with them, or do it themselves? That seems to be the most common.
Oh yeah. What are your thoughts on? And I get this question a lot from advisors, and I know I've been through my journey with it. Is somehow tying your advisory AUM fee to the planning engagement? I think the risk I've heard advisors run, and I ran into this, is that if I ever was like, hey, because you're doing financial planning, I'm going to put you on a different tier of advisory expense. Mm-hmm. What could happen is that person may do a one-time financial plan and never do it again, or the plan's not very big. And then you've just taken a discounted fee on your advisory business for maybe the next 20 years. So I've come to the place where I keep those totally separate conversations. How have you processed that, and what do you guys do with that?
That has been a fun challenge that we've had to work through. We haven't really had anybody challenge us yet, but we know that, like, hey, that could easily happen. And how do we want to go ahead and say, hey, here's how we're going to handle that in the event that that does happen. Yeah. Right now, we kind of just say, like, hey, we're able to go out and compress the advisory fee. And then, hey, we have this, the planning fee or the consulting fee. And then say, okay, hey, we're going to continue this. And we try to establish early that, like, hey, if this relationship stops, right, then we have to then go back and determine how we want all this to move forward. How is all this going to change? And that's what we would just right now have to bring up that conversation of, like, okay, hey, we're not doing this level of service anymore. We're now back over here. This is how it's going to work, right? I think we've only had two or three people actually say, like, hey, we did this, hit the year engagement, don't want to do this again. And then we have to sometimes have that difficult conversation of, like, okay, hey, well, here's what we've done. Either we need to find another person, or, hey, we can drop you down to a tier lower and just handle X, Y instead of Z. And those have honestly gone very well. We haven't had anybody leave our service and be upset. It's just sometimes that either, hey, we're not the one, so we need to go find them another advisor, or they're just like, hey, I don't need what I thought I did. I'm really okay being over here. And so once we have that conversation, we just have to reset the expectations, and being very clear on that has been the biggest help that we've had.
Yeah, I found, those conversations are much harder if I've never referenced before. The table wasn't set for, like, hey, this and this could happen. Maybe they will never happen. But that conversation out of the blue, I think if it's like, hey, I'm going to now increase your fee on something, that usually is never met with excitement. Even if you can navigate the conversation and get out the other side, how do you soften the blow of, if this ever happens, this is going to change? So I like that. So where are you guys now? You obviously have 100 people paying monthly retainer. Nice. And then what's the vision? Like, is it 1,000 someday? Is there a point where you're like, hey, we're just going to try to hit this threshold and keep it at that level? What's the goal?
Yeah. So we're right now, we have the vision for, hey, we want to be at 150 by the end of the year. Because what we're trying to test as we go, because we knew the first goal was 100. Next is 150, because we're seeing, okay, hey, where are there potential holes or gaps that we need to go back and fill, whether that's on the service side, the onboarding side. I'm just constantly trying to get better. And then really just see, like, okay, from a calendar management and a time management, servicing everybody, going back and having those meetings, because they signed up thinking they're going to either meet with me and Gates or sometimes both of us together to say, okay, hey, can we manage this? My thought is Ace and I could probably get to about 100 apiece. And then, hey, we'll need a service advisor each next year. Service advisor kind of being like, hey, the second chair to help handle all the back end stuff, one off questions from clients, to kind of take some of that off of myself, Gates, and then some of our team members to have that person handle it. And then from there, it's going to be, because we've kind of built out this model with doing these events with graduating medical professionals and partnering with one or two hospitals, knowing that, hey, we're going to have X amount of people coming every year, right? We're going to have the opportunity to talk to these people. So we know that eventually, unless we just want to stop doing what has built this, we're going to have to bring in another advisor to take our place. And eventually, Gates and myself are not going to be the ones that want to go do all these events. I mean, we have 13 for this year with different programs and different schools. So we know within probably the next year to 18 months, we've got to have the service advisor to take the load off of us, have that entity advisor to where, hey, they're coming and building under us. They could have maybe another 75 to 100 and just kind of see, okay, how many can they manage?
Yep.
From there, we don't have definitely not 1,000. That to me would be way too many. Yep. We get torn with going back and forth of wanting to build out this massive team, just saying, like, hey, we want to have a team of 10 or so people work with maybe 300-400 medical professionals. Some of them will fall off and we'll kind of just keep refilling that and go from there. So we kind of just say, hey, this is where we know we want to go for the next 3 years.
Yep.
we'll get to about 2 years out, see what we've gotten, and then say, okay, hey, do we want to push past this? Just to say, okay, hey, is this growing naturally? Like, are we just bringing people onto our art because we're doing the right thing? We're building a practice that people want to be a part of, mm-hmm. or are we just chasing growth for the sake of growth? And we definitely want to do the former and not the latter.
So what is that? I can imagine someday you unlocking like the code of an advisor can handle this many clients, this service level, this fee, maybe the fee does step up over time. What are you guys currently doing for these 100 people a month? Is there something you're doing every month? Is it more of a quarterly touch point? What's the service model look like?
Yeah. So, and I think that's where a lot of people, when they first hear us, of like, hey, we charge this monthly, they think that there has to be a communication or a touch point every single month. And to a point, there's some that want that. And we try to make sure that if they are someone that loves to be over communicated to, like they get one or two extra touch points during the year, whether that's emails, sending book reviews, sending a book to them, podcasts, stuff like that. But most of the time, we try to position it as like, hey, here's the fee for the year, right? We just build this out on a monthly basis. And so far, every single person just pays monthly because it's just easier with how we set everything up. And so they know that, hey, on top of a CPA conversation, they're going to have two meetings where we are bringing the agenda. We are going over stuff kind of in the middle of the first and second quarter, hopefully when a lot of the tax returns are all finished. And then towards the end of the year of kind of saying, hey, what do we need to finish up with? Have we missed any of our goals? What are the final touch points? And then we let them know that life's going to happen, right? We don't want them to feel that, okay, hey, let's say we just had the meeting last month. Next month, something happens, whether it's a job change, they have to move, right? They're expecting a child. So, hey, I have to wait until the next meeting because then we're really not being able to service them when their life changes and really being the center of their life with them. And so we kind of just let them know like, hey, look, you just reach out, email us, right? Text us, call us, call someone on the team, let us know that, hey, something has happened. And we can decide of like, hey, does this need to be like, hey, it could be handled through email. This can like, hey, we need to have a quick just phone call for 30 minutes or like, hey, no, we need to get back in here. Yep. And typically at first, when we're bringing on a new client, it takes a little bit for them to get comfortable with that. And that is essentially why we did not want to do like the hourly rate system, because we never wanted our clients to hesitate to reach out to us. So that's kind of how we built that out, just to make sure like, hey, we are giving these touch points. And then we have, you know, emails that go out every other month of different things. We try to send, like I said, books or book reviews to people that we know are interested in it and trying to figure out what they're interested in to just to have that little extra touch point during each month. But yeah, I think the misconception is a lot of people think that there has to be something every month. And kind of like what you were saying on the last subject is like, hey, as long as you're communicating that on the front end, right, there's not this expectation of like they have to hear from us every single month.
Yeah, I think what's important if expectations aren't set, the mind always wanders to the negative. Wait, why am I paying Chase? I haven't heard from him in a while. It's like, no, I told you, you know, I'm allowing you to pay monthly to spread that out, but here's the service model. And I think in parts of my career, I look back and I was like, man, every issue I've had can probably be stemmed back to the fact that I did not set the table well at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we definitely made those mistakes in the beginning and had to kind of iron that out. And I mean, that's why we got to spend that time kind of playing around with it to make sure like, hey, we're ironing out all the details to make sure like, hey, when we go, just like now we say, hey, all the stuff that we're going to be setting up, like it's going to be, you know, especially if we're doing insurance, opening investment accounts, some of our 1099 medical professionals doing solo 401ks, like, hey, it's going to be a 2 month onboarding process. So after we have our you know, three meetings, it's still going to be another 2 months to get this onboarded. So that way they don't feel bombarded by a bunch of emails to sign documents. And also it eases it on our team as well. So where our team isn't like, okay, hey, we are just now onboarding five people this month and everything has to be done over this next week and a half. So that has helped a lot to setting that timeline as well for the team and for clients.
I love that. All right. So for all the advisors listening, with your story, what you've been through, if you were to encourage them / challenge them, if they're, you know, where you were 2-3 years ago with, hey, healthy practice, I'm doing the traditional model, but I think I want to become a different type of advisor, what would you say to them?
I would say you just have to start. And as long as you or they feel comfortable with their why and what they're trying to build and they're sharing that with them, right, you'll know immediately if someone's going to be on board or not. So we just make sure that, hey, we're sharing what we're trying to build, how we like to build our firm and handle clients in that first conversation. And then we just let them know, like, hey, based off of what we're going to be doing, we're going to communicate in the second meeting, like, hey, what is that price point going to be? And we have it, you know, tiered out to the 2 or 3 different levels. So we try to always just make sure they know after the first meeting, like, hey, this is how that process goes. And that's the biggest thing for us and what I tell everybody else is, like, just know your why and just tell that story. Right. Tell them how you're going to do it. Most people are not going to be like, no, I hate that. That sounds horrible. Right. That is what got a lot of our own barriers out of the way and just got it comfortable just sharing everything. And that has helped tremendously.
Awesome, man. Chase, thanks, brother. It's cool that we got to meet when you were at the beginning of this process. And now you got 100 people paying you every month just for your time and ideas. That's great.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, brother.
All right, brother. Keep it up. We'll talk soon.